I think it's going okay. Can you hear me? Okay. The title of the sermon today is Three Impossible Things Before Breakfast. And in case you are not familiar, or just to remind you, I'm going to read you a little bit from Lewis Carroll's book, Alice Through the Looking Glass, which is about a little 19th century British girl who has these improbable adventures in magical and metaphorical sort of lands. "I can't believe that," said Alice. "Can't you?" said the Queen in a pitying tone. "Try again. Draw a long breath and shut your eyes." Alice laughed. "There's no use trying," she said. "One can't believe impossible things." "I dare say you haven't had much practice," said the Queen. "When I was your age, I always did it for a half an hour a day. Why, sometimes I believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast." Now, I think that we as Unitarian Universalists tend not to practice believing impossible things very much. So I thought 6 was kind of a tall order. Yeah. We're going to try for 3. And I hope you had breakfast. So really, it should be 3 impossible things before lunch. And I started thinking about this in conversation with a friend of mine who is a Unitarian Universalist seminarian at a Christian seminary. And one of her professors was talking about the teachings about the resurrection of Jesus, a literal resurrection of a person who had died. And my friend said, "Excuse me, hey, hang on, I have a question about this. It seems to me that it is impossible for a person who has died to be literally, physically resurrected. So can you help me understand why this is an important thing for you to believe?" And her professor said, "Well, yes, it's impossible. Of course it's impossible. And that's why it's important for me to believe it." She said, I don't, what? And he said, "Look, I believe in other impossible things, like the idea that we could live in a world with justice for everyone. It's never been done, and I believe in it." So believing one impossible thing can help us to practice believing in other impossible things so that we can try to make them possible. Now, I think you may have some practice already with believing impossible things. If you have ever been married or had a commitment ceremony with a partner. Because when you make those vows to each other, you say, "I will love you forever. I will be with you for the rest of my life." And sometimes that's how it happens, and that's great. And sometimes life takes a turn and you're led in another direction. But when you stand there and you make those promises, you are saying something that you can't know will be true. I remember when I married my husband, we wrote our own wedding vows, and I agonized over mine. What was I going to promise that I knew that I was always going to do forever, for the rest of my life? I was like, I can't even promise that I will always put the cap on the toothpaste. What am I going to promise? But I thought, well, sometimes you make the promise, and then you work to make it so. I think that we also do this in our Unitarian Universalist communities and congregations because we covenant with each other. And our covenants are a way of making promises about who we will be and how we will be and how we will treat each other together. And one of the things I love most about covenants is that built into the very idea of a covenant is that sometimes we screw it up and we have to come back into right relationship with each other. Covenants are not contracts, right? When you break a contract, there can be a lot of problems. There can be fines and legal consequences. And when you break a covenant, you go to the person with whom you have broken the covenant and you say, "I screwed up. I'm out of right relations with you. And I want to make it right. How are we going to come back together?" And that is an impossible, possible thing that we do sometimes very well, sometimes not so well, but we practice. You may have been following what's been going on with the UUA these last 2 months. There's been a lot of soul searching. There's been a lot of heartbreak. There's been a lot of people resigning their positions and arguing with each other and hurting each other. There's been a lot of being out of right relationship with each other. But one impossible thing that I believe in is the idea that we can be a racially just faith, that we can have a Unitarian Universalist Association that in its hiring practices and in its funding practices and in every piece of its fabric becomes an institution that really welcomes and honors and affirms people of all races and cultures and identities. And it's really hard to do that because the dominant culture that we live in does not. So we are pushing a boulder up a hill all the time. What are we going to do to learn to do things differently? What are we going to do to remember our covenants and say, oh gosh, I did it again. Yeah. I'm out of right relationship with you. I'm out of right relationship with an entire category of people. And what am I going to do to make that right? To come back into right relationship? This feels particularly impossible, I think, for those of us who are white, because if you are white in this culture, you don't have a lot of practice with ways of being other than white ways of being. And it might sound perfectly benign to you that when a hiring committee says, well, we were just looking for the right fit for the team, well, of course it just happened to be the white man. He was kind of similar to the folks on the team and they got along and that's just kind of how hiring is. It's very difficult to learn to expand our ways of seeing and thinking and being with each other. And yet we are called to it. And if you are a Unitarian Universalist of color, it can feel almost impossible to believe that this faith that you love, that you want to be life-giving for you, it's almost impossible to believe that this faith is actually going to stop hurting you, even as it is life-giving. I have had some heartbreaking conversations with friends of mine who said, I don't know, I'm going to try to stay, but boy, this is a lot of covenant breaking, and I need there to be more covenant remaking. I need us to be returning more and more and more to right relationship. And boy, is it hard when first I have to even convince my white friends that the covenant was broken in the first place. They say, really? What are you upset about? It feels impossible, but I think we can do it. I really believe in that. And third, just to give us a really tall order, I also think that it is possible somehow for us to heal our country. There is a huge amount of pain and fear and grief and anger. We all know that. You know that intimately in this neighborhood this weekend. But I think it's possible for us to heal, although it may take a long time. I think that we as a country have lost a lot of the art of citizenship. Parker Palmer has some beautiful books about this. You can check them out if you're looking for a deeper exploration. He says it's important for us to participate in public life. It's important for us to have conversations across difference. It's important for us not to withdraw, not to stay inside this bubble or that bubble, but to be out in our communities, making relationships with neighbors who are different from us. I also think that this is a thing that we as Unitarian Universalists particularly have to offer our country right now. We have practice with making covenants. We have practice with being in a community where some things are shared and some things are different. I would bet there are at least 5 different theological orientations in this room, and that is a conservative estimate, right? How many of you are in this room? 40? There's probably 40 theological orientations in this room. And here you are, and you're a community, and you're in relationship with each other. You know some things about how to connect with someone who is different from you in some ways, and shares other things with you. I think this is something very powerful that we have to offer our country right now. And I think that one of the ways we start doing that is by cultivating some of our spiritual practices, the ones that help us get in touch with what is really going on inside us and around us, which is another countercultural thing that we do. Because we live in a dominant culture that is all about denial and all about smoothing things over. When you're in the grocery store and somebody says, "Oh, hi, how are you?" You say, "Fine. How are you?" Right? Are you always fine when you say that? Sometimes are you thinking, "Oh, my heart is broken," or "I'm overjoyed," or "I'm so angry." And then you think, "Oh, I'm in the grocery store. I'm fine. I'm fine." Sometimes in the grocery store you have to say, "I'm fine," because you're not going to hold up the whole checkout line. But you need to know inside yourself how you're really doing and how you're really called to be in the world. Are you supposed to be a pirate just because everyone told you you were supposed to be a pirate? Are you called to be something else, someone else? Are you really fine just because you're in the checkout line and that's kind of the socially acceptable thing to say? Or are you feeling something else? And when you look at the world around you, are you just picking up the bias of whatever media you're reading today or whatever your Facebook feed says? Is the world really all doom and gloom and everything is terrible? Is the world really all flowers in people's gardens and new babies? Is it maybe both those things at the same time? And it turns out part of our work as religious people is always to hold both those things at the same time. Another spiritual practice we can find useful in doing impossible things is commonly referred to as prayer. And if that word does not work for you, I invite you to translate to whatever sort of focused intention practice works for you, whatever that might be. For me, I find it looks like prayer, because for me, I find the practice looks like talking to I don't know what, but expressing what it is that I think I need to be able to do my work in the world and be who I am called to be. In November, in the days after the election, I would read emails and listen to phone calls and talk with friends who said, "You know, I'm disabled and I'm terrified that I'm going to lose my insurance and I'm going to die and my friends are going to die." I would talk to Jewish friends who said, "I'm really worried about the rise of hate crimes." I would talk to friends of color who said, "You know, I wish I could say I was surprised, but I'm not surprised, but I am disappointed." And I would have to say out loud, often alone in my car while I was driving, "Oh, make me brave, make me strong, make me somebody who can help. Make me somebody who can stand up for justice and protect those who are under threat. Make me somebody who overcomes her fear and uses her privilege for good. Make me somebody who can simply witness and be there with people who are afraid and in pain." I don't know who or what I thought I was talking to, but it helped me to say it out loud. So I encourage you, when you are naming something that you need, find a place and try saying it out loud and see what happens. In that spirit, we're going to close with a reading, which is the prayer that Eleanor Roosevelt said every night for most of her life. And I need to invite you to translate again, because there is some God language in it, and not only is there God language, it is masculine God language, which doesn't work for me personally, but this is Eleanor's prayer, so I'm going to give you Eleanor's words and you should feel free to hear them however it makes sense to you. Please join me in a spirit of meditation or prayer or whatever sort of focus and receptivity may work for you. Our Father, who has set a restlessness in our hearts and made us all seekers after that which we can never fully find, forbid us to be satisfied with what we make of life. Draw us from base content and set our eyes on far-off goals. Keep us at tasks too hard for us, that we may be driven to thee for strength. Deliver us from fretfulness and self-pitying. Make us sure of the good we cannot see and of the hidden good in the world. Open our eyes to simple beauty all around us, and our hearts to the loveliness men hide from us because we do not try to understand them. Save us from ourselves and show us